Good morning. Give me Jesus on this great day here at Alford Street. Reverend Wesley, members of Alford Street Baptist Church, I want to start my remarks this morning by saying that those numbers that you just shared with us, where this church, almost year in and year out, is bringing close to 10,000 young people here to say, here is a path toward a college degree. We bring in the HBCUs, they meet these young people where they are, and then they leave with $5 million. Alford Street is putting its money where its prayer is. And we really do appreciate that and thank you for all that you are doing to open the door of opportunity to so many young people who desperately need it. I thank you, Alford Street, for inviting me to be your guest speaker this morning as part of your celebration of African American History Month. I thank you, Albert Street, for your long-standing tradition of supporting our youth by recognizing and facilitating their getting a college education. I thank you, Alford Street, for your equally commendable tradition of recognizing the achievements of this nation's historically black colleges and universities. And I thank you for deciding on this morning to honor Morgan State University. For Morgan State University, this is a very special African American History Month celebration because this is the year in which we on our campus are also celebrating the 200th anniversary of the birth of Frederick Douglass. For many years, Frederick Douglass was a member of a church in Baltimore called Sharp Street Methodist Episcopal Church. And that was the church where former slaves who had become ministers in the church became the visionary founders of what is now Morgan State University. And that was the church where Morgan's first class was held on April 30th, 1867. And so we are very, very pleased this month on the Morgan campus to participate in the bicentennial birthday celebration of the American hero with ties to the founding of Morgan State University. Now, in addition, during African American History Month at Morgan, we pause to celebrate the birth of yet another African American intellectual giant. That, of course, being Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, who in 1903 wrote a landmark treatise called The Souls of Black Folk. And what that treatise did was that it set the tone and the tenor of race relations for the 20th century in this country. And so for many years, Dr. Du Bois lived in a neighborhood adjacent to the Morgan campus, a neighborhood called Morgan Park. And that neighborhood was built by and for Morgan professors and other prominent community leaders in Baltimore. And Dr. Du Bois was a close friend of Carl J. Murphy. And Carl Murphy was the publisher and editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper, and he was also the first African-American to chair the Morgan Board of Trustees. And so it has been documented that Dr. Du Bois and Mr. Murphy could be found on many early mornings, much like we are here in Alford Street this morning, walking through the streets of Morgan Park, where they would be discussing the great issues of the day. They would be discussing the future of Morgan. And so then in 1960, Morgan State University became one of only a very few HBCUs to actually have the temerity to award an honorary doctorate to Dr. Du Bois during the era of the House Un-American Activities Committee hearings. And so, Reverend Wesley, we take this opportunity as well to wish a happy sesquicentennial birthday to W.E.B. Du Bois during this particular African American History Month. Now, I'm very pleased this morning to celebrate our shared appreciation for the legacy and the value of our nation's historically black colleges and universities. As many of you know, Morgan has just concluded its sesquicentennial, 150 years of purpose, 150 years of promise, 150 years of progress. But that gave us an opportunity, yes, to pause and to look at our progress over the last 150 years, but also to plan for the next 150 years. And as part of that celebration, we realized that a very unique thing happened in 1867, the year that Morgan was born. 8 other HBCUs were also established in that same year, making 1867 a historic year in American higher education, because more colleges were established, not HBCUs, just colleges. More colleges were established in 1867 than in any other single year in American higher education. And so these were the 9 HBCUs established in 1867, and all 9 of us celebrated 150 years this year. And Morgan reached out to all of them and said, "This is not a singular celebration. We're all going to come together, and we're going to celebrate our excellence, we're going to celebrate our progress, and we're going to chart the next course for the next 150 years. And so we brought to Morgan, Alabama State University, Barbara Scotia College, Fayetteville State University, Howard University, Johnson C. Smith University. We brought to Morgan Morehouse College, Morgan State University, of course, St. Augustine's University, and then Talladega College. And we created the unified HBCU sesquicentennial celebratory week. And oh, what a week we had. We started with a torch relay. And of course, each president was challenged to run his or her leg. And I'm not going to say where I ended up. We also reached out, and much like you just heard this unbelievable voice from Simone, we said, where else in the history of America are you going to find voices like that, with all due respect to Duke, except on the campuses, Reverend Wesley, of HBCUs? And so we then asked each of those campuses to identify 6 or 7 students. They came to Morgan under the direction of Dr. Eric Conway, director of the Morgan State University Choir, and just put on an unbelievable concert across the 9. And so we took this opportunity as well to recognize the fact that there have been challenges along the way. That's just who we are. We are not immune to challenges in HBCUs. We are not immune to challenges as a people. And so we just confront it head on and take what we have and make what we need. And so the topic that I want to address during my remaining time is the remarkable journey, of historically black colleges and universities, the nation's unsung national treasures. And it is most appropriate that I deliver this message to a congregation at an African-American church, because the black church played a central, pivotal, and all-important role in the establishment of higher education for blacks. And if the truth be told, when you look at the fact that we have 105 historically black colleges and universities, over 50% of them were founded by religious denominations. 65 out of that 105. And so I want to do three things with this talk. I want to just kind of go back, if you will, 181 years and talk a little bit about the founding of the first HBCU. And then I want to share with you a brief history of some of the things that we're doing at Morgan that I think is leading the state and the nation, very strong value proposition. And then I want to conclude by basically opening the curtain and letting you see who is this David Wilson, president of Morgan State University, and how in the heck did he ever, ever ascend to such a position given the penurious background from which I came. And so, first, the birth of historically black colleges. Well, we all know that the first university established in this country was Harvard in 1636. But Harvard University was established in 1636 to educate young, wealthy, white males for the ministry. It was not until 200 years later that there was interest in higher education for African Americans, and that interest eventually led the Quakers to establish an institute outside of Philadelphia called the Institute for Colored Youth in 1837, which is now Cheney State University. And so I do know that we perhaps have parishioners here who are from Wilberforce, who are from Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, and we perhaps have some individuals who are from Cheney. There's this kind of little argument going on there as to which one was the first, but let the history books reflect that the Institute for Colored Youth in 1837 was the first foray into this HBCU era. And so the Quakers gave rise to Cheney. But then they were followed, if you will, by the Baptists, by the Catholics, by the Lutherans, by the Methodists, by the Presbyterians, the Seventh-day Adventists. All of these congregations came together and said, you know what? It is high time to establish institutions that will be there to educate the sons and daughters of newly freed slaves. And so, Alfred Street, my concluding comment here is simply this. It is no exaggeration at all to say that HBCUs in this country were born out of the church and they were born out of faith. When we begin to... You have to kind of go back to 1837 in that period to kind of understand what I'm talking about. Institutions built on faith. Let me take you back to the founders. Here's what those founders had to understand, many of them, that they were about bringing into existence institutions that they will never, ever enroll in. That they had to look so far ahead, they had to be so visionary to say, you know what, we need colleges for our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, our great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. And we know that we are digging wells from which we will never drink the water. We know that we are building fires and we'll never be able to warm our bodies by them. We know that we are planting trees and we will never, ever experience their shade. Ladies and gentlemen, our ancestors were brave. They were visionary. And we must never, ever forget their sacrifices. We must never, ever take for granted that which they created. We must be there to nurture that. We must plant more trees. We must dig more wells. We must start more fires. And to forget what they did and what they sacrificed is to do an extreme injustice to all that they did. And so let's keep that in front of us. Now, let me just say a word or two about an institution that I have been so fortunate to lead for 8 years. I love Morgan State. It is hands down one of the best institutions in the country. It is the best institution in the country. And I know when I say that, that the Hamptonites and the North Carolina A&Ts and the Tuskegees and the Spelmans and the Morehouses and the Tougaloos and the FAMUs can all say, well, I think mine is as well. But we at Morgan think we have something very, very special. There are four dates that I want to put in front of you as to how did Morgan State become this global institution today. So the first one is 1867, then 1890, 1939, 1975, and then 2 years ago, 2016. So let me go back briefly to 1867. Morgan was actually founded by five ministers who came together at Sharp Street and said, we want something different for black folk. One of those ministers, though, was the late Reverend Samuel L. Green, who was born a slave in Dorchester County, Maryland. And he was arrested on his master's plantation because he was in possession of a book, Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin. And there was a law which basically said that slaves could not be taught to read or write, and they could not even teach themselves. And so Samuel Green was arrested, and he was sentenced for 10 years in a Baltimore penitentiary. And he came to Baltimore, and he served 5 years, and they let him out around 1862. And he said, you know, while I was in this penitentiary, you have only deepened the fire in my vernacular gut. And I'm going to get out here and we are going to make something real happen. And so Samuel Green gathered those ministers at Sharp Street and said, let's build something for the future. And that was the birth of the Centenary Biblical Institute. 1867. The Centenary Biblical Institute held that title until 1890, and then it was changed to Morgan College, still private. And then Morgan held that name, Morgan College, until 1939. So some interesting things were happening during that period, of course, in Maryland and in the South. And what was happening was that blacks were not allowed to go to predominantly white institutions. And in the state of Maryland, it did not have an alternative public comprehensive college for blacks. The other institutions that were in existence in Maryland were teacher training schools, with the exception of College Park. And so the state of Maryland then purchased the private Morgan College in 1939, put state into the name, and it became Morgan State College, a public institution for the first time. Then we held that name until 1975, and in 1975, another visionary elected official this time, the late Verda Welcome, the first African-American senator in a state legislature in the United States, Morgan alum. She introduced a bill and she said, it is time for Morgan State College now to grow up even more and to become a university. And so she introduced a bill to change the name to Morgan State University, to give it graduate programs and a research mission
And that was 1975. And then 2 years ago in 2016, for the very, very first time, the state of Maryland passed a bill which said, Morgan State University is the state of Maryland's, quote, preeminent public urban research university. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come a long way in 150 years. What began really as an institution with 9 students and 1 teacher in the basement of Sharp Street, today we boast nearly 8,000 students from 40 states and 60 countries. While the Seminary Biblical Institute made its modest beginnings with 1 faculty, today we have nearly 680 full-time and part-time faculty members at Morgan. We have come a long way. We have 11 schools at the institution. We have more than 100 degree programs at Morgan. We lead the state. We are number 1 in the state of Maryland in producing African-American electrical engineers, number 1 in civil engineering, number 2 in industrial engineering. We are number 1 in journalism. We are number 1 in social work. We are number 2 in business. We are number 4 in the United States of America in producing black engineers in all fields. I ran into some parishioners here. Absolutely. We've come a long way. I ran into some parishioners here from North Carolina A&T. I think very highly of Chancellor Harold Martin. And so North Carolina A&T is number 1 in the United States in producing black engineers. Georgia Tech, number 2. Morgan is next. And I always say to Chancellor Martin, we are kind of coming for you. But we've come a long, long way, and we are very proud of the value proposition that we have. And so I get invitations to appear on national panels all the time, talking about our institutions. And here's sort of the position that I take. I can recall I was invited to the National Press Club shortly after I came to Morgan, and they had a national economist there, and his first question was, President Wilson, are HBCUs still important today? And so I paused for about 5 seconds and I said, was that a serious question? And here's my take on this. When you look at the talent coming out of these institutions, my take is simply this. America, how can you even commence to have a conversation about American competitiveness long-term if these institutions that are producing a third of all black engineers, a quarter of all blacks with degrees now, are not leading that discussion? Not subordinate to the discussion, leading the discussion. Because the country is beginning to look more and more like the student population on our campuses than it is than the student population on the other campuses. And we have 150 years of experience in taking students where they are, wherever they are. You can be in the cloud or you can be on the ground. We'll take you and we will take everybody to the cloud. And that's who we are at Morgan. And we take a back seat to no one. Because we produce graduates at Morgan and at the other HBCUs as well that can compete with anyone, any place, anywhere on any world stage. And I think we need to just process that. So, Reverend Wesley, I'm going to bring my remarks now to a close. But what I want to do is I want to show you why. I'm so passionate about this because I could very easily have been a statistic myself. No college degree, not even having shown up on a college campus. I'm the youngest of 10 children. I grew up in rural Alabama. My father was a sharecropper We farmed cotton and okra and corn, but cotton was the main crop. And he had a system in place where he would say, you know, David and Minnie and Dorothy and Francis and my other six brothers, you guys can go to school 3 days this week, but you have to stay out two. And you can go 2 days this week, but you have to stay out three. And that was what life was like for us. And so I was in the seventh grade before I remember going to school 5 consecutive days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And so we lived in a little shanty, shotgun house, as they used to call it, with no electricity, no plumbing, none of that. And so the owners of this plantation would bring down to this little shanty Look and Life magazines. And they brought them there not for us to read, but they knew that my mom was creative and innovative. She was a genius. She took what she had to make what she needed. And she knew that the only way she could keep us warm was to plaster these darn pages of Look and Life magazines on the wall. And so, Alfred Street, what I'm saying to you this morning is that on those days when my father would keep us at home and I would come home from having a cotton sack across my shoulder, I would grab a kerosene lamp and I would read the pages of Look and Life magazines. And I gained an insatiable appetite for knowledge and for education. Reverend Wesley, I went all over the world without ever leaving the confines of that little shanty. I was reading stories about Africa, stories about Italy, everywhere. And then I said to my father one day, I said, Daddy, I want to go to college. And he looked at me and he said, Boy, he said, college is for white folks. And we never talked about it again. And then 5 years passed. And I got up this morning, August 26, 1973. And I was getting ready to go out the front door to Tuskegee Institute at the time. And I heard someone get up in the adjacent room, and it was my father. And he made his way into the front room, and he had on these overalls with one strap across his shoulder that was attached and the other was loose. And he said to me, David, he said, son, I am so proud of you. He said, you're about to do something that no one in this family has ever done. You're about to go to college. And he said, 5 years ago, you told me you wanted to go to college. And do you recall what I said to you? And I said, well, Daddy, of course I recall, because it was so hurtful. He said, but this is what I really was thinking. I was thinking, how in the hell am I ever going to pay for you to go to college? He said, but you know, I've been saving for this day. He said, I've been saving for the day that I would see little David go out that door to college and to go to Tuskegee. Because in his mind, I was like going to Harvard, right? And he reached in his overalls and he pulled out something that he called a piece of money. And he said, hold out your hand. And I held out my hand. And he grabbed this piece of money and he put it there and he pressed my hand so hard, I thought the money would go through my hand. And he put his hand over mine and he said, son, use this investment wisely. It is all that I have. And I said to him as I looked into his face and the tears were flowing down his chin. The first time I had ever seen my father cry. He said, "Daddy, I will. I will." I went out on the front porch as the sun was coming up and I opened my hand. And there in my hand was a crisp $5 bill. That was all that he had been able to save for 5 years. And so I got to Tuskegee and I struggled. I didn't have the money. I had academic gaps. But April Ryan, Morgan graduate April Ryan, we had her on the campus, gave her an honorary doctorate, and she made me understand why I was able to persevere. She said, "You know, Morgan and other HBCUs love you to success." That's what happened with me. And so every single day at Morgan, we literally are about loving our students to success, and why I, as president of Morgan, don't take any foolishness. You have to come at me in a way that is going to respect the brilliance of my students, the legacy of our institution, and its potential on the global stage. And so, ladies and gentlemen of Alfred Street Baptist Church, I truly do thank you for recognizing the value of historically black colleges and universities, and today in particular, recognizing the great value of Morgan State University. So my last few words to you this morning are simply these. As we come through the turbulent times that we are coming through now, we must make sure that we place a high value on those institutions that our ancestors envisioned. Because if we don't place a high value on them, you can rest assured that no one out there is going to raise the price. I thank you very much for this opportunity.